Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Monster X Radio. It is Sunday, September 8th, 2013. We got another great guest lined up for you tonight. And with me tonight, as always, is my co-host Shane. How you doing, buddy?
Doing awesome, John. Glad to be here as usual.
Nice. Would you like to tell everyone about our guests and introduce them?
Certainly. So really happy tonight to have on Mike Richburg, also known as Apex Encounters. Mike is very knowledgeable on a lot of different cryptids and has had his own fascinating encounters that he will share with us tonight. Mike is based out of South Carolina and does a lot of his own cryptozoological investigations and has done his homework on the history behind many of the cryptids we know. So without further ado, welcome Mike Richburg. Welcome, Mike. Hello? Mike, are you there?
Here, I'll... Welcome, Mike. You with us?
You might have to call back in. Maybe we...
We'll have to give him a call back or...
Until we get
him back on the line, do you have anything exciting going on this weekend, Shane? Did you go out squatching?
I sure did, and looks like we got him back. I'll maybe touch up on that a little bit later. So you want to answer that?
Okay. Welcome, Mike.
Hi, guys. I must have some technical problems or something there. Everybody okay?
Yeah, we're okay, as long as you're okay.
Yeah, man, it's all good. As long
right
as you
on,
can hear me now.
Yeah, we can hear you loud and clear, and we're really happy to have you on the show with us and talk about your goings on, Mike. So, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, man. I appreciate you guys having me on, man. I really enjoy listening to the show. You guys have a great show.
Hey, well, I appreciate that. Thank you. So, I followed you for a while now, Mike, under Apex Encounters. I met you, over a year ago, but, via Facebook and whatnot. But do you mind telling our viewers and listeners what got you interested and into this crazy field of cryptids and whatnot?
Well, sometimes people ask me that, and I always say I didn't really choose it. It kind of chose me. And what I mean by that is when I was just 14 years old, I had an encounter with a North American ape in a swamp in central South Carolina. And although I was armed with a 20-gauge shotgun, I didn't feel too good about the encounter. Luckily, it didn't threaten me in any way or anything like that. It was a very traumatic experience for me. I didn't even go back in the woods for probably, 3 years or something like that.
Wow, yeah.
But, I kind of did go back in the woods because I was real curious and all, about what I seen. And it wasn't too many years. I guess it was about a decade after that happened, we had this whole lizard man thing break out in Bishopville, South Carolina. And I was real curious, to try to find out exactly what was actually seen. I felt like something probably was seen. It was just a matter of what was seen. Because I've, kind of been looking into different reported cryptozoological critters in the area already. And when that happened, I said, well, surely that's very interesting. So I spent some time doing that. And it wasn't no more than maybe about 2 years after that, I actually witnessed a very large avian, a bird that looked pretty much just like a golden eagle in most respects. They said it was very, very large. It had a 16 to 18 foot wingspan. And I saw that bird pick a young deer off the road and fly away with it. And that really blew my mind. So, after that, it was kind of like it was on then. There was no way I could ignore the things I had seen and heard other people talk about. So I guess by the end of that 12-year period, by my mid-20s, I was pretty much hook, line, and sinker all in.
Yeah. That would have to draw you in, at least wondering what the heck's going on.
Have you seen that video? It was on Monster Quest, I believe, out of Illinois, where they showed that really large bird. They actually had a video footage of it.
I may have. I saw some video somewhere, and I don't recall what show, or it might have just been on, something like a YouTube or what have you.
I
do recall some video that was very interesting.
All the scientists and things that they had analyzing it all kind of had a different answer or, how big they thought
the
wingspan
was.
Is
this the one where the bird was in a tree? It was two birds, maybe?
It did end up flying. It was a guy on a river, He was a Native American guy.
I may have seen that. Yeah, I was about to say.
It kind of looked like a giant turkey vulture to me.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it looked like a big condor, turkey vulture.
Yeah, and
what I seen was straight up eagle. It wasn't a dinosaur. It wasn't a condor. It wasn't, you know, what I seen looked almost exactly like a golden eagle. So I'd say about the only big difference would be the coloration of the underside of the wing. And other than that, and three times the normal size, it looked very much like a golden eagle.
Now, did it come down and swoop, or did it do what, you know, eagles do, like with
I was coming down. It was about first light. I was heading down, I believe that's Highway 21 South, near the Combahee River. And I come around along, it was a long straightaway, and there's a little bend in the road right there, and that's another long straightaway. When I come around that little bend, down at the other end of the straightaway, I could see, like, deer jump around because I could see them tails and white tails bouncing way up there all in the road and bouncing around in a big fuss, you know. I said, uh-oh. Well, somebody must be hunting. A hunter's done spooked them, or a car hit one of them, or something's bad, something's happened, you know. Then, and I'm pretty much heading in that direction, I guess. I don't know, 60 miles an hour. I'm running on through there about average speed. And the closer I got, I could see something in the road. And, I mean, you know, it took me a long time to try to put my brain around what I was seeing. Because I said, well, that's too big to be a deer, and it's too big to be a person standing there. And at one point, right before I realized what it was, it almost looked like a horse with a tarp thrown over it. And I had to slow down to keep from hitting it. And as I started slowing down, and I was getting closer and closer, the thing looked up at me. I knew exactly what I was looking at then. And it kind of bowed its wings out and looked straight. It looked me straight in the eye. It didn't look at my truck and say, okay, that's a charging animal or a vehicle trying to take my meal. It looked me straight in the eye. And it hopped around like it did a 180 and grabbed a deer up off the pavement that it was standing on and flew right on off. It took three cycles of its wings for it to clear the trees, which had been on my left-hand side of the road, headed to the east. And that just, you know, that was something else there.
Oh yeah, I mean that's a huge bird.
Yeah, and I got a good look at him too. I mean a good look, because I got pretty close. You know, I had about stop. Pretty much. I mean, I may have even come to a stop.
You think that's just sort of like freak of nature, or is that an actual cryptid? And was there anybody else that witnessed it?
There was two other people in the truck.
Oh, okay.
See, the routine was me and my ex-wife and a friend of mine, we'd always go down camping, and we worked second shift. So I didn't consume alcohol, so I was a designated driver. Well, everybody else would drink until, you know, 3 in the morning or whatever, and we'd hit the road, and I would drive. Well, they was asleep. And one of them didn't wake up, and one did, and couldn't find their glasses in time to really see what they seen. But they confirmed it was like the size of a hang glider with a person hanging under it. They could see that much.
And is there other encounters like that in that area? Has anybody else, you know, witnessed the same thing? Have you heard of any?
Not too much. And, you know, I looked and looked and looked. I've definitely been asking around, and, you know, that's something I'm very, very interested in.
Yeah.
The only phenomenon I might could relate to that animal, though, I am kind of been seeing a pattern with what they call occasionally the goat thief, which is whereas some goats get mysteriously missing out of tall pens and there ain't no tracks from no cat or no coyotes or no nothing. No tracks at all. And this occurred in Remini, South Carolina, near Lake Marion, and it was kind of big news in the area around the county there back, I guess, around 1970, possibly early 70s. I don't have it in front of me here. It was very early in the 70s, around 1970. And it was a case where a man had an 8-foot fence, and the goats got missing, and he put another 8-foot up fence all the way around, and they still got missing. And they never could find their tracks. The goats just get missing. And they had everybody scratching their head over that. Well, the same thing happened just about, I don't know, it's probably been 5-6 years ago now, maybe down here around Hardeeville and Ridgeville area. Maybe like due south of this other area by an hour's drive or something. So it's the same kind of phenomenon. These goats turning up missing. And then a hunter or some hunters found a goat in a tree. And they kind of chalked it up to cat activity because the goat was kind of tore up bad and packed up in a kind of wedged in a limb way up in a tree. And but at the same time, they never found no tracks for no cat. So something is feeding on goats occasionally throughout the history of the area, apparently. And they don't have no problem going over as much fence as you can put up. So
now, with the deer that it picked up, was that roadkill or?
Well, you know, I thought about that, and I don't think so. Because there was a really big oak tree on the left-hand side of the road with a really big limb on it, probably about 18, 20 feet up in the air or so. And I think what we had there was some of that ambush predation going on. Where that bird was sitting in that tree, right there where them deer, he knew them deer was going to cross. And when I heard a deer come through there, he just swooped down and got this one. Which a deer, I can tell you about exactly, that deer weighed about 45 or 50 pounds. Because that was one of them smaller coastal deer that I know well. But the thing about it was, I couldn't see no spots on that deer until he picked that deer up. And when the hide kind of flexed, I could see like the remnants of like, fawn spots, you know what I'm saying? So I can have a pretty good estimate of the age and the size of the prey. It was not a fully grown adult deer. It was a small deer, but still, yeah, you know, maybe 50 pounds.
Yeah. Huh.
And I think he was sitting right there hunting. I really do. And I got the full impression that that was not the first time he'd done that.
And I was going to say, I mean, it's got, with South Carolina there, you know, with the canopy and whatnot, it's got a good place to hide out.
Yeah, you know, I've done a lot of thinking and studying on the matter, and I don't know that what I've seen is what you call your classic Thunderbird or anything
yeah.
like that. I think the Thunderbird's more of a thermal riding condor, maybe type bird or something, maybe similar along them lines. What I've seen, I think, lives its life much like a big eagle in the Philippine jungles might live its life, eating monkeys or deer or what have you.
Yeah, and
living
in
the trees.
Those suckers get big, too. You know, I've seen them in person, and they're huge.
They get pretty big.
Yeah.
When this thing was about 3 times that big. So it totally freaked me out.
What kind of native down there?
Well, you know, I studied up on all the big birds in history and everything. Of course, down here, you're going to see your ospreys and your bald eagle and your gold eagle occasionally. And you know, you pretty usual lineup of falcons and red-tailed hawks and what have you, chicken hawk. But, you know, nothing, of course, approaching, nothing supposed to be approaching that size. There's been, you know, talk of, you know, Washington's eagle and, there's actually a book out currently by Dr. Carl Shuker, Mirabilis, A Carnivore of Cryptozoology and Unnatural History, that has a real good account of my sighting it.
Okay.
And that would be a good pickup for anybody that wanted to find out more about that.
Oh, okay.
But, man, you know, there's Washington's eagle, which is somewhat controversial. Not recognized by the Audubon Society or something to that lines, is kind of recognized, ain't kind of recognized, you know. Some people believe it's this, some people do believe it's this. I don't know. I don't know if that's what I've seen. Even that's not really supposed to be as big as what I've seen. They ain't really a good candidate on the books.
Yeah. No, I'd love to hear more if there was any other encounters of that nature in that area or surrounding states, you know, collaborate.
I would too, and you know, that's a difficult thing to, I don't know really how I would facilitate that. I've given that quite a bit of thought, but I'm definitely, if somebody's out there and you know something or heard somebody seeing one or whatever, please do reach out. Because, I mean, I know what I saw.
Yeah.
You know, and I can try to rationalize it, and people try to tell me, yeah, it probably wasn't that big. But see, when that thing opened its wings up, one wing tip was over the center line of Highway 21, and one wing tip was over the grass on the side of the road.
Yeah, so you had
so
a good...
This wasn't no, like, normal size eagle or nothing like that. It wasn't, I was tired, and I just didn't really see. No, I seen it good. I seen what it did good, too. And it looked me straight in the face. This thing is smart. And when it did, I was intimidated. It flared them wings out like it wanted to intimidate me or something, you know. I mean, it was like I got the feeling like I was in the water swimming and you see a shark. It's that feeling. I made sure the door was locked and the window was up when I seen it. Good.
Yeah, makes me wonder about a lot of the Mothman sightings, if, you know, that is something that could be thrown in the mix for a lot of Mothman sightings.
Well, yeah, I've thought about that, too. Now, I didn't see no glowing eyes or nothing like that. Nothing. This thing just looked like a standard eagle sept. It had to be at least probably, well, I mean, like, the top of the wings is a little bit taller than his head because he was kind of leaned over. Mm-hmm. But I'd say that was probably could have been like 6.5, as much as 7 feet. So this thing could stand 7 feet tall maybe or something. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, the body is very broad, too.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe it in relation to anything, but it's like, both legs are like tree stumps. I mean, this thing had some meat on it.
Was that more intimidating than your Bigfoot encounter?
Yeah, in a way it was, but not really. It's more interesting almost because I've seen Bigfoot a couple times now. But the North American ape thing, when I was 14 in that swamp, it was just so traumatizing to me. That was the worst one for me personally.
Yeah, and that
were you out hunting?
Yeah, I was hunting. Me and my dad was hunting with the local hunt club. They was having a dog drive. They put some standards out down the river because the big bucks always just catch one in the river. But I was the last standard strung out down there on the river. It was my daddy and then me, and we walked in there together. He told me to cross over this little cut or whatever on the way in, and I stepped across the little creek there where I could, and then he told me to walk on down the river and then turn around and kind of face a little open area when I got to the river. So that's what I did. And when he did the same thing, but as we got close to the river, that cut opened up, so he was a good little ways from me, upriver. And I walked till I got to the top of the riverbank, and I backed up a little bit just so I could see in the kind of semi-open area that I just walked across. And I sat there. Man, it wasn't long. And I heard something like, get up out of the water, kind of over my left shoulder down the river. I could hear the water running off of it. And I said, oh, bingo, that's a big old deer. And I heard it climb the riverbank. He'd come on up a pretty tall riverbank there, maybe as much as 20 foot or whatever. He'd come on up there. And he stopped in some thick stuff, right to my left, dead even with me, kind of. He wasn't no more than about, I don't know, 50, 60 foot away at this point. And I couldn't see what it was. And it was kind of making a good bit of noise and sounding heavy. And I thought then it was a big hog, I might be in trouble just with that 20 gauge, you know. But then that thing made a noise like a person. It made like a kind of a grunt or a sigh kind of noise or something. And I said, well, shoot, what have I got here? Like an escaped prisoner or something down at the river hiding or something? I didn't know what to think. Yeah. But then it walked out. It kind of walked out in front of me. Kind of, you know, quartering like from my left out in front of me. And I seen it when it stepped out from behind the brush. I seen it good. It was all black. Down there, I said, bear? And I said, no, that ain't no bear. Because I looked straight at the ears, and it had round ears like a person. And it was walking upright. It was the color of a black bear. It had a coat like a black bear.
So real small hair?
Yeah. The animals in this particular area have a coat that's kind of shorter than it is reported in another area of the state.
Yeah.
The animals in this place have a black coat that's very similar and well-groomed looking. I mean, if you've seen a black bear in this thing, if you just seen hind end or something, you might dismiss it as a black bear or whatever. I mean, It's similar as far as the color, actually.
I know it was wet, but was it shiny? Was the hair kind of shiny?
Yeah, it was kind of shiny. And I don't know how much of that was wet and how much, because this thing was wet from like the ears down. It just come out of the river. There was an island. After looking at it later on the map, there was an island right there, you know, behind me on the river I didn't know about. And I'm quite sure that he come from that island, come ashore, and he would have came ashore right there. He climbed up that bank, and he walked out there in front of me.
And it never turned around, right?
He never turned around. He didn't know I was there because he couldn't smell me when he swam past me in the river, like, going behind me. Because I was, like, 20 foot up in the air compared to him, probably.
Okay.
20 foot higher up off the riverbank. I'm not sure, at least 16 probably feet, a good little ways up the riverbank. And I think that's the only reason that happened.
One of those rare times where you get to see it before it sees you?
Yeah, and when I seen that, that's exactly what I thought. If it turns around, I don't know why I'm just going to have a heart attack and drop dead. Please don't turn around, is all I can. And if it turned around, I done figured I was just going to shoot it in the face, try to put his eyes out and jump in the river or whatever, throw the gun at him and try to outswim a blind one or whatever I had to do. Because it kind of had me hemmed up. I mean, the river was to my back. And right beside me on the other side of my right was that cut that was full of log jam and gator or whatever. Over there, that'd be like the last place you want to go jump in the water or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was real scared. I didn't know really what to do, so I peed my pants, and I had to consciously stop myself from it. I almost shot it just out of sheer fear, out of stupidity or whatever. I had to, like, actually stop myself from shooting the thing, and then it didn't even know I was there until... It walked right on over there to where I had walked in, and it smelled my trail. And it stuck its head down for just a second, and then he picked his head up and walked on off at kind of a different angle, but just kept walking off, kind of cornering to my left a little bit.
Probably at a faster pace.
No, what were you all hunting? Did you say deer?
Yeah, we was deer hunting that morning.
Okay. So were you using
slugs? And it wasn't long after that. I didn't know what to do. I said I was just going to sit there and let him... Because I was still, I had to walk out right behind him, basically, so I wanted to give him plenty of time.
Yeah.
So I sat there for a while to make sure he was gone. By that time, I heard the dogs kick up. They was, you know, jump. They done turned the dogs loose down at the other end of the hunt, because this is right at the beginning of the hunt when I seen them. As soon as we got walked in good is when I seen him.
That's a low-caliber gun, though, huh?
Oh, yeah, I immediately knew this gun here is not going to do me anything. Because I'm going to tell you right now, when I was looking at it, although it wasn't 6.5, 7 foot tall, but, I mean, it was thick as a Coke machine, one of them big Coke machines. This thing, and I'm speaking from some point of knowledge about livestock and game and stuff like that, I could seriously estimate the true weight at probably around 700 pounds, give it to me. And I knew that wasn't going to cut it. That 20 gauge, even with number 3 buckshot or whatever was that, I mean, that would just be a joke.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean,
I
even to get
it,
you'd have to be fairly close to a deer to get a deer with that.
Oh,
even,
yeah. I'd had to have a big, if it was a big deer, it had to step on me for me to kill it, probably. Yeah, I mean, I was 14. My daddy's probably a conservative guy. I mean, even though I could probably handle myself with it, I mean, he was trying to do the appropriate thing and not get me.
Yeah.
You know,
we'll give him the smaller gun.
When
it wasn't long after that. I mean, I was shooting 12 or whatever, but I was, you know, a fairly, you know, knowledgeable hunter. I could kill a lot. I've killed deer with that 20 plenty of times. And
nice.
You could kill a big deer with it, but shot placement meant everything.
Yeah.
You had to get a lucky pellet through the ribs or whatever. But, when I seen that thing, it really traumatized me.
Yeah, I was going to kind of touch up on that. So when did you share that story? Did you go and tell your dad, or did you hold on to that story? I mean,
hell no. We walked out of there.
Of course not.
And my daddy seen I was all shook up. I probably looked white as a ghost, I guess, because he told me where to meet back while I double-counted out of there. And, once he got, I get that thing time to get off, and then dogs started coming, so I was like, okay, I'm going. Boom. And I double time back. My daddy came out, he asked me, was all right? And I was like, yeah, this don't feel good or whatever. And I almost said something right then. But I didn't, because you have to understand, like, in rural South Carolina back then in the 70s, like, where I lived at growing up or whatever, we was hunting with that hunt club. It was like, you know, the sheriff and the justice of the peace and the barber and the plumber and everybody hunted there or whatever, all my cousins and everything. I've just been known as Monkey Boy the rest of my life, as soon as my daddy opened his mouth about it when he got back down there to the hunt club. When they picked us up, you know, my daddy would have been cracking on me or something about seeing a monkey boy or whatever. So it would have been over. So I wasn't about to be monkey boy the rest of my life. I mean, and my daddy, you know, he's like a real common sense kind of guy. If I said I was seeing gorillas in the woods or whatever, he might be like, yeah, maybe you don't need to go hunting right now or whatever. I was scared to mess that up because, you know, that's something I share with my daddy. I really like doing, you know. That was my main motivation for doing it. But, man, that thing was so terrifying. I didn't go back in the woods for probably 3 years after that. And I ain't tell nobody.
But
I ain't tell my, I was married to one for 19 years. I didn't tell her.
What was, I mean, how did that play out? You know, did nobody want to know why you didn't go out in the woods for 3 years?
Oh, well, you know, it's like my daddy and I would usually do that thing on Saturday morning. And I was getting into age where, you know, like, dating and stuff was kind of starting to matter. And I just told my daddy, like, I just didn't like getting up that early because I'd have to go to bed at 9 o'clock Friday night to get up at 4 o'clock Saturday morning or whatever, you know. It was killing me getting up that early was the story, you know.
Okay.
So you're going to have to maybe go without me a little bit, man. Just getting up that early is just killing me, my Friday night thing, you know. So, and there was some truth to that. Friday night was becoming more important, you know, as you get a little older. And y'all know what I mean. But, so I just played off like that and all. But, you know, I didn't want to share time with Daddy and go hunting and all for other reasons. So I eventually got my high-powered rifle and went and climbed back in deer stand a few years later, whatever. And I started going around, poking around for stuff and researching the best I could and trying to find out if other people had ever seen anything, you know, in the area. And was there any, like, Native American stories in the area? And other things like that. And I picked up on a few things here and there and started learning a little bit. Because, I mean, when I seen that thing, I didn't even know. I didn't say, like, oh, there's a Bigfoot. Or, I didn't know what I was looking at. Because, I mean, I seen the legend of Boggy Creek, like, maybe a few years before that were. But, man, this thing, I mean, I didn't know how to quantify what I was looking at. It was an ape man. I ain't never been showed that in no book or whatever. That was something new there. I was like, oh, baby. You know, I don't even know how to take that. That ain't supposed to be, you know.
Yeah.
It really does affect you when you see something like that. It makes you think there's something wrong with you sometime, even when it really ain't. You just person had to be standing there. So,
yeah.
I mean, I encourage people to come forward now. I finally kind of come forward, and I talk about my stuff now openly. And, man, you know, I see that thing, and it shook me up bad, so I really got into it. Then the lizard man thing broke out.
Yeah.
And, of course, Lyle Blackburn's got a Lizard Man, the true story of the Bishopville Monster book coming out on Halloween. That's going to be the bomb if you want to know all about the Lizard Man. I helped in a small way with that.
We like Lyle Blackburn around here. So, yeah, I know. And you did your stories in there as well? Or?
Well, it's just some theories I have based on a little bit of poking around I've done in the Bishopville Skateboard Swamp area back in the late 80s.
Okay.
In the wake of the Lizard Man thing. I went and tried to, you know, amateur investigate as best as I could, you know, and drive over there on the weekend when I had time. And I actually had got hooked up with a man that owned a little bit of land, and I had a good spot going there for a little while. And I found some tracks. And I casted some tracks. And I remember them very clearly. I made drawings of them and other things. Now, I don't have the cast anymore. Unfortunately, it was lost during the divorce quite a few years back. But, that was a rough one. But,
she got the cast.
I think they got destroyed, but it's a long story.
Yeah.
But I can draw them for you and everything now, but unfortunately, they're no longer with us. I had a few little casts of different things. But
Is that where you got your name, Apex?
Oh, no. No, but that's not a bad one.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of us have been down that road, you know.
Yeah, I've been there,
situation
done
with a divorce. Right. Yeah, as long as I've got that T-shirt. But I have some interesting tracks I cast down there on the edge, on the other side of the skateboard swamp, kind of, which was on that man's land. And it was a very, like, human-looking track to me, almost. That's the first thing that struck me about it, because I was, in my mind, I had this preconceived thing before I really started learning about what the original witness, Chris Davis, what he actually described. I didn't really know. I was thinking lizard man, so I was looking for something like a gator track or something, maybe. I don't know, what, like a dinosaur track or like a lizard or something. You know, but what I seen looked like a primate track with three toes.
With three toes.
With a very, very inset instep. Very pronounced instep, very narrow heel. The heel usually don't even strike the ground. Sometimes it does if it steps in something deep.
When was the lizard man phenomena at its peak? Was that in the 80s?
Yeah, late 80s when it broke out. I think the original sighting was in 88, just off the top of my head.
Okay. Is there any way that could have been like a Bigfoot covered in seaweed or something coming out of the swamp?
I have a very specific theory about what I think it is after doing a little bit of research on the matter. I think it's what... the old folks, some of them still call it what they call it for the last 300 years around here, the European settlers anyway, is the hide behind.
Yeah.
Also known as the dog man, werewolf, Lugaroo, beast of Bray Road, seven shoes, on and on and on.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I know by many names, but it's a primate. It's not a Sasquatch, but it's another primate. That's my theory.
Yeah, and I've heard before that, you know, the lizard man, you know, may have just been a primate covered in moss, you know, coming out of the water and such.
Well,
you know?
Chris Davis said it was covered in green hair.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, well, you know, lizards usually ain't too hairy, but primates are sometimes.
Yeah.
So I started
thinking
about that.
Well, you know, it's hot down
there
in South Carolina.
Spend a lot of time in the water. Because of the heat and other reasons in South Carolina. And primates, I'm sure, are no exception. And sometimes animals that spend too much time in the water can get algae growth in their hair, which would explain the green coloration.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that. No.
You may have seen pictures of sloths and monkeys with green hair.
Yeah. And I find that
animals
fascinating.
That move... Yeah, they kind of have algae growing in there because they just in the perfect condition, perfect situation for it to grow.
Yeah.
Now, you said that, the face and the hands and the feet apparently look like they was covered in scales maybe. But at the same time, is that just wrinkly skin or is that scales like, maybe it was scales. Maybe this thing's eating a lot of fish. Maybe it was literally like fish scales.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. You can interpret that a lot of different ways. But hair, when you say hair, you got me thinking primate or mammal at least, not, you know, reptilian.
Right.
And, you know, and then I realized maybe them tracks I seen was the real deal. That track way was the real deal.
Now, Mike, I talked to you earlier in the week. We had a phone call conversation, and we talked about some of the possible, different... ape or Bigfoot species out there, and you know, you believe in that particular area. I believe you said there's two to three different types.
Well, in the state of South Carolina, once you get past, and if you go east of the town of Kershaw or north of the Black River Basin, you're more or less in the PD area of the state, and in that area. All the witnesses over the last few hundred years have all reported a critter that's a little bit different from the short black hair covered, more gorilla-like animal that I've seen. What they're reporting is something built like a basketball player that's got long red hair, and it's more human at him. Does humane acts and kind gestures and stuff like that. It's a totally different animal, and it looks different and acts different. So, yeah, I mean, in the low country, in the floodplain, all these big rivers, you got this black animal except for in the PD, where you got the Great PD River and the Little PD River and the Lynch's River, and et cetera. All these river basins have this red hair animal, the red squatch, call him Big Red, because they get a little taller.
Like that.
He gets a little taller. They reported, like, see, when I first started doing all this, I come to a point where when somebody reported a sighting to me, when they told me where it was at, I could about tell you what they was going to describe. I could tell you what color it was going to be in ours. So I said, well, that's a pattern there, so I need to do something about that. So I took my little highway road map that I got from somewhere, and I started making little dots on it based on whether it was black or red and how whether it was over 7.5 or under 7.5 feet tall. And I immediately see a pattern. Well, I can draw a map on the line. There's a bunch of red dots over here and a bunch of black ones over here. And I said, well, what's the difference? Well, the difference is the deer, the white-tailed deer population and the wild hog population. Where you have a deer density in South Carolina greater than about 32 or 33, give or take, you know, deer per square mile, about 30 or 35, you're going to have them black ones. And when you got them black ones, you ain't going to see them red.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's also the same place where the wild hog population is prevalent. And I've already observed on several occasions a direct correlation with the animal and the wild hog population. So I think that's real key, too. But it's obviously a pattern that can't be ignored. Now, either all these people have all been calling some kind of international hoaxing hotline for the last 300 years and cooperating their story somehow, because none of these people know each other.
Yeah, of course not.
Or it's true, because they know what color animal they've seen, and they report the right color. How do they know what color animal they're supposed to report based on the geographic area they report a sighting in? Either it's real or they all cooperating. And I'm going to tell you right now, they ain't all cooperating because they don't know each other. We're talking about a small African-American girl, you know, 7-year-old girl in Collin County. We're talking about a truck driver from Ohio passed through. We're talking about somebody stationed at the Air Force Base over here. They, like, these people all over the years, all different walks of life from different places all over the country, report the same thing in the same area. You can't deny that.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, I got a question sent to me in a private message. Do you know Sheriff Tisdall?
I didn't know him personally, no. I know who he is, but no.
Okay.
I've seen him a few times. I've thought about trying to interview him, but I never did or nothing. I mean, he's done, you know, quite a few TV shows and whatnot, or he did.
Yeah. What about that vehicle that was damaged? You know the one I'm talking about with the, I think the one this person's referring to is the one where it had, like, teeth marks and on the front bumper.
We're talking about an SUV that was a little later on since the original wave of sightings.
I believe so. Have you ever had a chance to...
Yeah, I looked into that a little bit. You know, they say it had canine DNA in the saliva or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And there was some dead animals found, a cow and a coyote, if I believe it was reported correctly, was found in a field not too far behind that home. And I actually been in that field. And look around.
Wow. Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know what to make out of that.
Uh-huh.
You know, this thing, and I'll tell you, the only reason I give it some credence now is because this thing's got a history of attacking automobiles.
Yeah, that's just
it's a clear-cut pattern where the lizard man, or whatever you want to call him, to hide behind, he don't like an automobile to stop or just come riding through it at the wrong time. Well, he's got a problem with cars and stuff.
Maybe one of its kids was hit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why they don't like them, but they have been aggressive toward automobiles on more than one occasion.
Yeah.
On sale. And there was, when the original sightings were happening, there was, I'm trying to think, remember the make of that car. I want to say it was a Mercury or a Ford. But I remember looking at a car that was tore up pretty good, but they claimed that the lizard man done jumped up on it and all kind of stuff. But, you know, I ain't a forensic scientist or nothing like that. I mean, I got a little bit of sense. I can go out there and try to make some determination, but it was interesting at least. But, you know, I think that Chris Davis seen something. I think that some people didn't see nothing. I think that people started looking, and they started seeing Sasquatch in the years after that and calling that the lizard man when it really wasn't. It was the Sasquatch. not to hide behind. I think it kind of got all convoluted.
Now, you have, you know, this is why I wanted you on the show, because I really like some of your thoughts and theories, but the hide behind, you know, is one that I personally had never heard of, you know, and you kind of gave me a lowdown and a breakdown of it.
Yeah, well, it was a common term used by early European settlers here in this country. They would see this animal that had canine-like features with three toes and three fingers and liked to hide behind trees and watch them and stuff, and had a tail and snout and all this. And, you know, and it's gone on through history. Before the white man, there was Native American stories. You know, when the white man came, it was the hide behind, or if you're from France, you probably called it a lougarou or a rougarou,
uh-huh,
which is kind of like a French version of a werewolf. That's what they refer to him as, where there's a lougarou or whatever. And then, you know, a lot on up into contemporary times, you got sightings of the Beast of Bray Road, the Lizard Man, Kentucky Goblins, all these things. A lot of this activity, I'm not saying all of it, but a lot of it could be attributed to a primate species. Because, you know, when you think about it, guys, European settlers and Native Americans never been exposed to animals in places like Africa or what have you. They came from Europe knowing about the wolf, or they were here knowing about the wolf or the coyote or what have you. They're familiar with canine entities, but they never seen a primate with a snout and a tail, like a baboon, for example. So they related it to what they knew. Now, had all them people originated in Africa around baboons and never seen a canine, they'd call it the baboon man. You see what I'm saying? Because they would relate the same features to a baboon, the canine teeth, the snout, the pig nose. Sometimes you heard of the pig man. Well, a lot of baboons have pig nose.
Yeah.
You know, so this animal, it was just a given. I mean, it's just accepted by early settlers and Native Americans. This is a real animal. Now, we've lost touch with whatever to hide behind. You'll still hear old-timers say that term. But nowadays, you know, they call it, sometimes you still hear lougarou, but you hear, like, referred to as a skunk ape sometimes.
Yeah.
Or what have you, werewolves, or different, you know, pick your term.
Yeah.
But
well, I
think we're dealing with a real animal. It's a primate, and it's not a dog.
Right. One of the and we talked about this too, but one of the most famous pictures of, you know, Dogman, Bigfoot, or whatever have you, is the Beast of Seven Chutes. And to me, and I've said this before on the show, it looks, you know, if it's legit, it looks really baboon-like. I mean, you can almost see the muzzle. I mean, it looks like a baboon, and it looks like
it's... It looks like a primate with a snout.
Yeah.
Like a baboon.
With a snout.
Or maybe if you want to go lemur or whatever, just saying, whatever, you know, but a primate.
Yeah.
That's the one holding
a
little dog.
Like a primate. Yes.
Yeah, supposedly it's holding like a little poodle or something.
It looks
probably.
It's holding a little white puppy.
Yeah.
Okay. It looks like a cross between a Bigfoot and a dog man.
Yeah. And that's, and I, you know, I often...
It's a Squatch with a snout.
Yeah. It's like a bad
I like that.
And so many of your encounters with dog men especially is a creature that is down on all fours, stands up and runs off, or vice versa. And you know, a lot of those encounters say that this thing has a tail. You know, and so if you had some sort of, you know, baboon-like creature out there that was that big, you know, it'd make a lot of sense, just, you know, as far as the baboon description. And the hide behind I found fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it's very baboon-like in a lot of ways, apparently, just based on if you take an open mind and just look at the description. Now, it's also very canine-like. But I'm just posing an alternate theory.
Yeah.
And that's going to be in Lyle's book. That's going to be a good pickup for somebody. That's a good read. I'm sure Lyle and both Carl are very good authors.
Oh, yeah. No, we, you know, followed them both for a while, too. And, I hope to get them both on the show here eventually. And I'm talk about their works and thoughts and ideas, you know, and going-ons. Yeah, heck
yeah.
Yeah,
I mean... That's just my theory on the whole lizard man thing and a lot of the related sightings of different animals. I mean, I've heard of animals describing like a turtle shell or spikes on their back and stuff like that. And I think if you're dealing with an ape, that spends, or a primate that spends a lot of time in the water, and this guy here, you're going to come out the water, whatever way you come out the water is basically what your hairdo is going to look like. In other words, if you come out the water and your hair's got swirls in it, it's going to look like some hard turtle shell with swirls in it. If it's all spiked up, it's going to look spiked up. It'll look like spikes.
Yeah.
So a lot of these types of anomalies and variations in the sightings can be attributed just to hair alone. So
right.
I have a pretty open mind when somebody says frogman, Kentucky goblin. What are they really describing?
Yeah, and time of day and lighting, all sorts
right,
of factors probably.
Right, all those things go into account, absolutely. And now, the Halpine reported in South Carolina is an animal that might run 7 foot tall, about 6-7 foot, but is a little lighter build than like a Sasquatch. You're talking about something that's a lot more wiry and not maybe as big around as Coach. So, but at the same time, this thing apparently has a real nasty attitude. Very violent. Been known to kill horses, or is believed to have killed horses in South Carolina. So,
baboons,
I mean, it ain't nothing to mess
with. Peppermint.
Yeah, it's just a souped-up baboon that's just angry at life or whatever. But, you know, I mean, if you look at baboons, they're like vicious predators, some of them at least. I mean,
they got fans.
They're running down deer or whatever, I mean, game animals, and taking them or whatever. Primates in general, I mean, you know, there's primates that run down lions and eat them. Think about that.
Yeah.
You know, a bileate was, you know, they didn't believe them when the natives would tell them, oh, there's 7 foot chimps down here eating lions. Oh, sure. You know, we believe you. But now they know it's true.
Yeah.
So, you know, a primate ain't nothing to mess with. They bad to the bone. And a lot stronger and more vicious than people give them credit for. You know, I mean.
Incredibly.
Yeah, I mean. And the two Sasquatches I've seen in daylight, you know, the two I've seen that was in daylight and close enough for me to get a pretty good look at, their arm was like as big around as my whole body just about. So, you're talking about something that is incredibly thick and muscular and powerful. And then the high behind, if it's big and angry enough to take out a horse for whatever reason, it could probably hurt you pretty bad. So, you know, I always encourage people to think safety first. If you go in the woods, there's a lot of dangers.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky enough to get close to a cryptid, it's probably also going to be very dangerous.
And have you heard of, you take in a lot of encounters and stories, right? You get people that get in contact with you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I've been doing that for a long time, and unfortunately, you know, that's not my line of work, per se. I do have a full-time job that I have to do, so there's a lot of times I don't get to investigate everything like I really want to.
Yeah.
But people have been telling me stuff firsthand, secondhand, you know, all the time, for a long time. There's reports of all types of cryptids in South Carolina. There's large snakes going on that we really can't quite put a finger on that apparently look a lot like a reticulated python, or at least in some cases have been identified as reticulated python.
Uh-huh.
But yet are really supersized and out of place. Giant salamanders have been recorded, or reported, I should say.
Yeah.
Which is very unusual. I think that's one of the more strange ones to me. We got the goat man, which is sometimes referred to as the Fort Mott Devil. And that's a very confusing, convoluted story there. There's an old folklore story, a ghost story, if you will, mm-hmm. about a gentleman that came to supper there at a house in Fort Mott, just outside the fort. And his headgear shifted or something, and they seen he had horns, so he was all strange out and everything. When they seen them horns, they just went for the Bible and started quoting scripture. And he took out there on fire, so it's burning hot. And he left a hoof mark on a rock out there in the yard. And you could actually drive down the road over there and see that hoof mark on that rock, at least up until I was a teenager probably. And I don't know if the rock got moved or something, but it got gone somehow there. But somebody got a hold of it. But that was pretty interesting. But there's reports, contemporary reports even, and historical reports of a biological entity, a real critter, like a goat man. And they call it the Vermont Devil because it's cause probably of that ghost story, if nothing else. And then it's further confused by the fact that a lot of times there again, people see a Sasquatch, say, oh, Vermont Devil. So Vermont Devil means different things to different people. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's very similar to goat men that's been reported elsewhere. I think, like, Maryland, I was reading, where apparently there's a goat man in Maryland that's very similar, for example.
But it sounds a lot like, to me, like, you know, have you ever heard of the Jersey Devil?
Yeah. I have heard of that. I've researched it a little bit.
Yeah.
They're usually talking about a winged creature.
Yeah, or Spring Heel Jack, which is one out of England, I think.
Spring Heel Jack, throw flames out of his mouth.
Yeah, I mean, some pretty obvious stuff.
From rooftop to rooftop, that's
leaving,
a hard one to wrap your head around here.
Yeah, leaving that hoof impression, you know, that
Well, they say he took off, and when he hit the door, he hit that boulder with the next step, and it burnt that hoof mark on it. And you can see that hoof mark for the longest time. Then they moved the rock, or somebody got the rock or something. That was kind of neat. I don't know if somebody painted it on there or what, but
yeah,
you know, it was something. Everybody looked at it when it drove through Fort Mott, I reckon. It's the only highway through there. Or...
Yeah.
But it's in Fort Mott is in a very interesting, active area. I get reports of Sasquatch in that area. Most of your major river systems, that's where your Sasquatch and your hide behind, and most of your other cryptids, for that matter, are sighted. That's a clear pattern where, you know, it's usually close to that river swamp.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't work the foothills in the northwest corner of the state too much. I kind of specialize in the swamp. But, you know, there's, of course, you know, reports of Sasquatch in the foothills of South Carolina as well.
Okay, and then that's a little bit drier, huh?
That's going to be drier. All your life's going to be concentrated around whatever water sources are there, a few lakes and rivers, and there are quite a few lakes and rivers there. There are some places where you got enough deer maybe to support some of them black animals.
Uh-huh.
It's very difficult to interpret the foothills here because it's almost always one of those sightings where there's a great distance and a difference in elevation. Like the animal's always up on the hill, and the people are looking up and they can't see it. They see it shaking a tree, or they, you know, it's throwing rocks or screaming or something.
Yeah.
But they can't get a good visual. That's a recurring thing in the foothills.
It's usually
because of the elevation change. They're looking up at it trying to see.
Well, that's pretty much, you know, widespread throughout the United States because Sasquatch is known, or thought to stay like on ridgelines or on hills like that, where they look down, you know, and can spot, you know, predators or people or whatever have you, and they have the vantage point of retreating or hiding, whereas, you know, they're tucked down in the valley, you know, and they get walked up upon, you know, they're kind of sitting ducks.
Yeah, it only makes sense. It's just more strategic for them to have that vantage point for a number of reasons, just for escape and outmaneuvering prey or you know, maybe other squatches or man or whatever's going on.
Right.
It's just, you know, the high ground means a lot, and that's no different with squatch sightings in the foothills, where we got an elevation change. It always seems like squatch is at the top of the hill and the fellow's at the bottom of the hill.
And that's why
so
I like
they don't get a sighting. It's more of an encounter than a sighting. Yeah.
Right, and that's why I like the idea of the you told me of the hide behind, because so many Sasquatch encounters or whatnot, they, you know, someone will see a Sasquatch behind a tree, kind of peeking or moving back and forth, using a tree to kind of hide itself or whatever have
you. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, and the hide behind.
That's standard operating procedure for the squatch and the hide behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just.
It's playing peekaboo from around the tree. That's tree peeking, yes, sir.
Yeah, that tree peeking, exactly.
Yeah, I've seen it. I mean, you know, reports of it anyway, mm-hmm. Time and time again.
Yeah.
Where it's almost like they lost track of it. I mean, they saw it. or they thought they saw something, and it peeks out and looks straight at them.
Well, even some of the...
It scares the teetotal hell out of whoever reads.
Yeah, well, even some of the best thermals out there, and I'll say almost all the thermals that people consider to be some good
legit.
Evidence or...
Yeah.
Yeah, legit, yeah, are they're behind a tree, you know, and they're kind of hiding behind a tree, using that, you know, maybe going from tree to tree or peeking or, you know, swaying back and forth behind a tree.
It only makes sense they would behave that way. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you now, you can be as sneaky as you want to. I don't care what kind of military training you got, and I respect my brothers in the military and sisters, too.
Yeah, amen.
And don't get me wrong. But you can roll up in that swamp like Delta Force. You still ain't the sneakiest son of a gun in that swamp.
Hell no.
I plan to be sneaky. And usually when I go, it's been by myself for the most part. And I'm right sneaky. Even when I go with people, you know, we're using, you know, some level of tactics and stuff to try to make our, you know, insertion into the area as undetectable as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's some people that say, you know, he knows you there anyway. And most of the time, that's true.
Yeah.
You'd have to be really good and lucky to sneak, you know, kind of close in. And I found that, you know, you can't really sneak up on one, per se. You can get pretty close. But they network together real good, and it's rare that you're going to see just one. I mean, now, a lot of times when there's a sighting, there's one animal reported. But
yeah.
I've become of the mind that there's usually more than one around, based on my little bit of experience.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you see the one, but there's another one or two around there that you don't know about. And the only reason you see one is because he wanted to. Like, I mean, if you hear one stomping in the woods and making noise, it's because he's making noise on purpose because he wants you to hear him. So you get scared and leave. Because they can move through the woods without making no noise. I done seen it. One night last year, I walked in there, and it was pretty dark. I walked in there, I creeped in on this creek where it was kind of semi-open on the creek bank so I could see across the creek a little bit. So I just sat there, and I kept looking up and down the creek all night, trying to catch something, you know, see if there's anything in there. And I just looked back up the creek, and there he was standing there across the creek looking at me. And it was close enough where I could have heard a raccoon or a possum or any bird messing around in the leaves or the brush that was everywhere. I mean, it's dry leaves and stuff everywhere. But, yeah, this thing just glided right on out there without me noticing it. And I put my head down. I kind of turned it to the right and looked back down the creek because I didn't want to, like, try to think I was intimidating him or nothing.
Uh-huh.
And he just kind of, out the corner of my eye, seen him just kind of go back in the bushes there. But he had never made no noise. The only noise he made is when he come in there, he was making noise like a hog. And I said, well, that's just old hog going down the trail. But I realize now that it was him. Because it was right after that when I seen him. Now, at that time, I was semi-subscribed to the hog imitating theory.
Yeah.
But now I done seen it again since then, real good evidence of that. And I, for whatever reason... There's a connection with them wild hogs, and they will act like a hog.
Okay. Hey, Mike.
They will
imitate
one.
We're going to take a short break here, and we'll touch upon that and some of your actual field work and whatnot when we get back. So we're just going to take a short break. So everybody, go ahead and grab yourself a beverage or grab something to eat or take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Sounds great. We'll be right back.
Some of your field work out there in the swamps, and we ended on the note of some of your ideas with the boar population or pig population out there.
Yeah, there's a direct correlation with the pigs and the hogs and the squatches. I done seen it. I've observed Sasquatch activity on a couple occasions. It just blew my mind where, for whatever reason, they were imitating a hog, and in one case, following closely behind some hogs, and had me convinced it was actually a big sow hog over in the thick brush that I couldn't see at the time while I was filming it. And then later on, after reviewing the video, it was very clear that it's a Sasquatch, because it actually is present. One time in there, I'm sitting there, of course, looking at a LCD viewfinder, trying to work the camera and what have you. Didn't really notice it at the time, but it's, of course, standing there. And I'm not sure if it was stalking them or herding them. Because I tell you what, you know, I often think about what kind of relationship the Sasquatch has with the animals, the other animals in its domain. And that one time especially, I just really got the vibe like he was, like, intentionally pushing them hogs down to that creek for whatever reason.
Kind of
but he wasn't like running like a man. He was just down on all fours acting like a hog.
So
it's very unusual.
Yeah, so by mimicking, I mean, you're talking about sounds, right?
Oh, yeah, grunt, squeal, all that, you know.
Yeah.
Just like a wild hog walking through the brush.
Have you heard whistles or anything of that nature?
Oh, man, now I've heard Sasquatches whistle. I've heard them scream. I've heard them whoop. I've heard them bark. I've heard them tree knock.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard it all pretty much. I'm even pretty sure I heard them talk.
Uh-huh.
And that's pretty much what really done it. I said it before, I was never going back alone to remote areas or whatever, but the last time I was like, I said, you know, I'm really going to try to get something, you know, worthwhile recording-wise.
Yeah.
I was actually on Father's Day night. And I drove down and walked, man, I walked way down in the swampy woods to a place I know was full of. I mean, I know they're in there. And I just had my little brand-new H1 recorder and a glow stick and a pack of Marlboros, and I sat there. And they come to me. That amber glow stick hanging in that tree limb, I can see it pretty good for a ways, I reckon.
How far away were you from that glow stick?
That was pretty much directly over my head, and it was a half-size glow stick.
Sounds like a gifting station, and you were the gift.
Yeah, pretty much. It was directly overhead, and I could see about 3 feet around me anyway, in any direction. I could barely see the ground because it was about 6-7 feet up on a tree limb. I like to use them little half-size amber glow sticks.
Okay, yeah, I'll be using
them. They're pretty handy.
Yeah.
It's like a six-hour stick or something. So I always got a few of them in my pocket or whatever, you know. But, and it kind of worked and all. And I was real nervous with them walking around me a little bit and all, but it got a point where I thought I heard them whisper. And it almost sounded like talking, like English talking.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, buddy, that does it right there. So I stood right on up and I hightailed it when that happened. Because, I mean, it's one thing to have them walk around, they trying to talk around you and they that close or whatever. That's just too much. So I hightailed it back to the trail. It must have been mile and a half, 2 miles back the trail. And I stopped and smoked a cigarette because I was kind of resting, man. It had been a long walk out of there, you know, back the trail. It's all that brush and everything. And I come out there on that trail, and I ain't stopped no time, and they started, like, abusing the trees. You could hear them, like, beating a tree. It was pitch black dark, pretty much. I mean, you couldn't see too much. But you hear them, like, beating a tree up, and then there's, like, a pause in this big piece of tree, like, lands, this brush lands over where I'm at. And I said, well, hell, I'm going to walk on some more. I don't see enough of that. I don't want none of that. And I walked on out there on the trail for a long ways again, and after I stopped. But I probably shouldn't have done that, but it was a way to kind of get some interesting audio that worked. But I ain't never going to do that again. It was stupid to go alone, you know.
Yeah.
I don't recommend doing that. Nobody, do not follow my example. I was stupid to do that.
Yeah, you know, I often say I won't do it, and then I end up doing it, and I, you know, get in myself in a situation where I'm like, well, I shouldn't be out here by myself, you know. Always, you know, and I do recommend always going at least with one person, you know.
Right, and that is important. If you can find somebody that was actually willing to walk that far in the swamp at night,
yeah,
for miles, and
that's
get the crap scared out of them by a Sasquatch or three.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had that problem too. But, I mean, I've been doing some tricky stuff before, and I've had them, like, I've recorded them, and then later on I heard them saying stuff like, you're not welcome, or something like that, just like in plain English. I'm like, that's just kind of weird anomaly, or am I dealing with a ghost, or whatever. And then this whispering on Father's Day was just strange, man. I was like, okay, I got to see Crest out on this one. But, you know, since then I've gone back to this boat ramp that's not too far from there. That's one of my strategies. I will go to remote boat ramps because, of course, the boat ramp is in the middle of the river swamp, usually in a rural area. There ain't nothing around there, you know, for miles. And go and set up recording, you know, and at least I can be close to the road right there. It's usually right there by the road and what have you. There's two other people around sometimes. And that's a pretty good strategy, though, just for sitting around recording if it's not a busy place.
Now, didn't you just record something recently?
I did. About a month ago, I was at this boat ramp, and I recorded something. It was one evening about 1:30 in the morning or so. It sounded, what I bet could best interpret at the time, maybe is like a lion growl. Really big noise, like off in the woods a good ways, a long ways off, but real loud, deep, like, roar or growl. But since then, you know, I've listened to some gorilla audio. It also sounds to me very gorilla-like. It is a very large animal, you can tell that. It's like a roar, like a dinosaur or a lion or something. People's heard it. They've got different opinions on what it is or whatever. But, I mean, I could tell it was a really big noise and by a really big animal that was not in a good mood. And after it did it, like, a bunch of, like, you know, stuff started walking in the house, started hooting, the woods kind of come alive after that or whatever. And when it really got my attention, when Mike Woolley said, you know, a couple weeks ago on the show, now I guess it was, said he heard that one. He seen roar like a lion. That's the first thing I thought of, because I just recorded that, like, you know, a couple weeks before that.
Yeah.
Now, where are these recordings? Are these in your private collection? Or I thought that was circulating online recently.
Oh, I don't know. The lion roar thing, I put it on my Facebook there and give it to whoever wanted it or whatever. I don't much care who hears it or whatever.
Okay.
I ain't trying to bogart it
up. And that was
up.
Your
I'm
more recent one, right?
Sharing. Yeah, I'm into sharing. You know, there's a few things I don't share with too many people because it's just too. It sounds too good. It's like, that just sounds like, like some of that talking, I just said, that just sounds like a person talking, but it can't be a person there. Because like when I walked way down in the swamp on Father's Day night, there wasn't nobody nowhere near me. By a long ways, no house, no road. The river was about 3 miles and the railroad track was about 3 or 4. And that was
it. Carry when you go out? Do you go out packing every time or?
I do not carry a firearm, and here's why.
Not. Okay.
I think it'll get me killed. Because I immediately seen in 1978, many, many years ago, and I've seen since then, that you can't hardly pack enough gun to stop this thing if it wants to jump out the bushes and whip your ass. Or it's just going to be over.
What about just a regular animal out there, though? You know, I mean...
Now, I have two things. I carry a big old Gerber BMF, like you might see with a SEAL Team 6 operative or something. Pretty robust knife. I also have a GoPro mount on a homemade spear. I got spear cam up and running. So I got my spear out there just to poke a hog, and it wants to get angry with me, because I'll be walking all around them hogs a lot of times.
Yeah, I've been
one
of my favorite hogs.
Is, yeah, I walk with the hogs and try to see Sasquatch, you know, because I figure I watch the hogs because I think he's watching them too. You know, I know he's sometimes close by them hogs. But I guess, you know, if a squatch come at me, I try to get a little DNA on the end of spear cam before I went down. So if I can find spear cam, you might have something there.
Go down swinging. Now, it'd be nice if you could post that audio in Monster X if you or someone has it in the Facebook group. I'd love to hear that again.
Growl?
I think I did hear it.
Yeah, let me see if I can whip that up for you.
I
sent it around. I'm trying to remember. I think I sent it to Steph and maybe Shane.
Okay.
Yeah, you sent it to me, and I didn't.
Let me see if I can find the correct file name.
Yeah, no, I didn't post it. I wasn't sure if you wanted to post it.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. I appreciate you asking, man. A lot of stuff I don't mind sharing, like that growl thing. I mean, it's pretty obvious that ain't me making that noise or whatever.
Yeah.
And there ain't no zoo right there. So, I mean, it's not like some big old African animal or something. I mean, it ain't no bobcat or no panther or no black bear or gator or something we normally have.
This is something we touched upon last week with Joshua and Jesus from the Crider Group about, you know, getting over this hurdle where everybody holds on to their information, you know, whether it's true or not, share it and go from there.
Absolutely.
You know, and
I'm all about sharing, man. I'm pro-sharing for most of your stuff.
Yeah.
Even where I go, I'll share that. I mean, I ain't going to post coordinates on Facebook or nothing, but, I mean, you know, I'll hook you up. I mean, I ain't trying to hide nothing. At the same time, I ain't really trying to prove nothing necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I might be in the near future, though, by way of something called the Sasquatch Existence Disclosure Initiative.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that.
That's something you're probably not going to be able to hear too much about until we actually have something that's pretty good. We decided, a group of people, including myself and at least one other person, a person of semi-prominence that most people immediately recognize, and a few other people, we're trying to do something. We think that, you know, we'd rather be proactive about the situation. You know, the whole North American hate thing?
As
the human population grows, and right now we ain't got a problem. But as we grow, we get more and more sightings, more and more encounters, more and more contact.
Right.
Sooner or later, the government's got to let the cat out of the bag. Now, there's a lot of things that's going to, you know, just change.
Can you hold that thought right there? I mean, continue with that thought. So are you of the opinion that the government is very knowledgeable on this and they're just holding out? Or?
Man, I'm just an old simple country boy that grew up in the woods. If I know it's real, I know good and well my government knows it's real because they got some stuff.
You would think. You
Fair
would
enough.
Think, yeah. Yeah. So this this Sasquatch Existence Disclosure Initiative group, I mean, how big is this group, and what is the main goal? I mean,
Well, the group is very small. The goal is to eventually do it the right way. We think sooner or later somebody's going to do the wrong thing with a Sasquatch, and we like an anti-kill group or anti-harm.
Yeah.
And we just want people to know that it is real at some point before the need arises for there to be any kind of protection or anything like that. I don't think there's any need for any protection of the species at this point. They're doing quite good by themselves.
Yeah.
But maybe one day it's going to come to that. We just need to be prepared if and when that time comes.
Yeah. I agree. If it becomes discovered, I think we will need something like that.
Yeah, and we'd rather do it in a more scientific, level-headed approach rather than just be, it goes down like some redneck just drops one with a .30-06 one day and that's the end of it. And I'll say, and I'm a redneck saying that, so, I mean, to be politically correct, but you know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah,
you don't have to go down a certain way. I mean, yeah, a specimen, but before a specimen, some good videotape of some blood getting drawn and documented, and maybe some hair and tissue samples or something.
So are you talking about, like, tranquilizing?
Possibly.
Possibly, yeah. You're not throwing it. You know, and I'm not against that at all.
The way to go if you could get a shot, and if it, I'm not sure the distance on something like that, but
it would have to be done by a pertinent like a wildlife professional with pertinent experience.
Oh, it'd have to be because you wouldn't know what kind of
That's another thing. We're trying to do things in a particular method where there's primatologists involved and veterinarian and that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because we can argue this all day with skeptics and people, you know, but, I mean, you're a firm believer. I'm a firm believer. Eventually it comes down to what are your motives for, you know, are you going out there just to feed your passion or are you going out there to prove the existence of it? Do you want Sasquatch to be known for a fact or are you just, you happy about going about your business?
Well, you know, on a personal level, I really don't care if people walking the street believe or don't believe.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just going to believe whatever TV tells them. Like, the government already knows. And then you got less scientific community. I mean, you know, that's where the issue is.
Yeah.
Scientific community is only going to accept a certain protocol. Things have to be done in kind of a calculated certain methodology involved with doing things the correct way as far as collecting specimens and analyzing, so just to, you know, just the handling of a specimen is very, very important. So, I mean, there's a lot more that goes into it than just running out into woods and looking for a gorilla to dart or whatever.
Yeah. Why in your opinion, would the government hold out on such an awesome find or, you know, I mean, why would they?
I don't know. It's probably one of the things that might not be against their interest, but it's not really, they have no vested interest in doing it one way or the other, kind of thing.
Yeah, if they, and, you know, I'm kind of middle road on that whole thing, but I think I agree with that. If they were aware of it, they're just like, you know,
yeah,
not really
like,
got any vested interest, yeah.
Right, I mean, yeah, I mean, whatever. It's cool like it is, let's don't stir the pot or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's the whole mode. I mean, that they almost certainly have to know. I mean, if
I know,
they got to know. That's what I was saying.
No, I kind of agree there in some aspect. I mean, if they were to come out and say, yeah, we know Sasquatch exists, people are going to come at them and be like, well, how long have you known? And, you know, this and that. Maybe they're like, well, let's just not say anything. You know, possibly. You know, I have no idea.
Right. I mean, the government works in mysterious ways. I wouldn't begin to really try to pick apart their motive or whatever.
Yeah.
You bet it's all about their agenda, whatever that agenda might be. I can't really speculate, but, I mean, you know, you hear people say it could damage, like, the forestry industry and stuff like that, and I don't know how much of an impact it would have. I'm not smart enough to know all that, but I almost got to know that they know. And then if they ain't really putting it in the newspaper and on TV, then they must be cool with things like they are.
Uh-huh.
So that's about all I can really deduce about it.
So how did you guys come about coming up with this disclosure group? How long has it been around? And it's just in its initial phase, right? Just started up?
Yeah, we're just starting up. It's this year we got together. And what we're going to do, or going to try to do, I should say, it's going to take time. It's not going to be something that's going to be right off the bat. The way we got it figured, it's going to take at least 2 or 3 years to even get something good if things go well.
Uh-huh.
You know, because it's not something like, you're talking about something that's really, really smart. This ain't like tracking down a deer or a bear or something like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Are your areas consistent? Can you go there and have activity every time?
Well, no. I don't know anywhere I can really go and get, like, action every time or nothing. I mean, I work the river basins, the floodplains around rivers like the Santee, the Congaree, the Wateree. You know, we got stories all of them down through there about the Wateree Walking Bear and Devil's Island, Devil's Elbow, the Monster of Joe's Island, the Fort Mott Devil, the Devil's Orchard. It goes on and on and on. And that's another clue. You know,
yeah.
If you, and Shane, by the way, I'm posting a looped version of that audio in your Facebook inbox right now, so you can try to link that to the show if you want to do that now.
Yeah.
I mean, I forgot what I was saying now. I was so proud of myself I finally found that file.
So about the devil names and monster names of areas.
Oh, yeah, like I was going to say, I mean, you know, if you're looking around like a place to do research, you find them big woods and, hey, look, this here says the Haunted Woods, or look, it's the Devil's Woods, or something like that. There's a reason for that.
Absolutely.
It just didn't come to be known as that for just out of the clear blue.
Yeah, no,
you know what I'm saying? And that's one of those many clues, like if you can travel and do different research areas, that's a strong clue, because folklore and legend and established history, you know, have everything to do with it.
Joe, I don't know if you ever heard of Joe Bielhart, but he's up here in up here in Oregon, and they call him the King of Clackamas, one of my research areas. But he has really done his research on some of those folkloric names and Indian names for some of those rivers and streams up here. That he's even gone as far as reaching out to some of the rangers. I mean, he's done his history on it and research. And some of the names, they're not even the same names now, but back then, you know, you have Devil's Ridge or Devil's Lake or Monkey Lake or whatever.
Devil Canyon or whatever,
Yeah. But even some of them
over and over again, man.
Yeah, over and over again, you know, and they were named that for a reason.
That's exactly right. There's a reason.
Got to do your homework.
Yeah, it pays the research, and just like the Native America thing. I take that in strong consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And right here in one of my favorite research areas, one side of the river is a floodplain, and the other side is a bluff. And the Native Americans in the area did not venture from the bluff side over into the floodplain. You know, it's full of game or whatever have you, you know, forage and everything, because that's where Tickly Cuddly lived, the hairy one. And you just didn't go over there. We got a deal. We don't go over there, and you don't come over here. So that was literally the law of the land right here in South Carolina, and that's one place. That was the setup until the white man came.
Right. Exactly.
You know, of course, they settled all in through the whole area, and then all these places, well, that's the devil's island over there. There's a devil lives on that island.
So, Richard Porter in our chat room asked a question. He wants to know your thoughts on infrasound. I imagine how.
Yes.
Do you believe in that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I do.
Oh, yeah.
Other animals use it, especially big, predator-type animals. They're known to use it. It's effective with doing a lot of different things. Elephants use it to communicate for hundreds of miles on the African savanna. Lions and tigers and whatnot use it to disturb the prey right before they pounce, and all, it only makes sense that a large mammal living in North America with the capability would use it. And I tell you, and I didn't really give much credence to, you know, I heard about it, say, yeah, infrasound, maybe, but I started learning about what it really was.
Mm-hmm.
And I experienced something in the woods one time where I walked a tight little circle in the woods, and come right back to where I was at, you know, a few minutes before.
Yeah.
And I said, hold up. That ain't no, the kid don't do that. Something's wrong. Because I don't never do that. I know right where I'm at when I'm in them woods. I know where I'm hidden. So that blew my mind. I said, how did I do that? It was like some serious deja vu. And the only thing I could figure was I might have got a taste of that infrasound.
Gotcha.
I mean, something happened that I can't explain.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that.
I have yet to experience anything like that. You know, a lot of people call it zapping or disoriented and whatnot. You know, I haven't experienced that. You know, I have experienced personally huge adrenaline rush and fear, you know, but I haven't experienced that yet. So, you know, I'm open. I'm not closed off in that aspect. But I do find encounters interesting.
Yeah, I think I've been around a few times. It's not something like you get tangible evidence for very easily.
Right.
It's more like gut feeling, like, it's like, I break infrasound down like this. Maybe sometimes when you just get that feeling in the woods where you look over there to some other part of them woods over there and you say, I shouldn't really walk over there, something ain't right about them woods over there.
Yeah.
I don't feel cool with whatever's in them woods over there. There's a reason you feel that way.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree. There's something there, you know, and
now,
I felt it.
You didn't hear anything, you didn't see anything, but somehow your subconscious knows there's something wrong over there. There's something bad over there.
Yeah, it's almost like a sixth sense.
Right, that's your sixth sense telling you, yeah, keep it up, something's wrong. I mean, yeah, something's wrong, man. I mean, I'm telling you. And especially, like, if you get that freaky feeling about some woods or something just changes in the woods all of a sudden and it's real directional, like, over that way,
yeah,
there's a reason it's directional. Now, if it's just a generic overall feeling about, well, I just feel kind of creepy, where that's maybe something, maybe not. But if it's directional, then you almost kind of lend some credence to something occurring. I still don't really know what it is, but something's occurring.
Yeah, you know, because like I've heard before, you know, being zapped, Crystal, Danger kind of posed this question in or analysis in the chat room, is that some people report a certain paralysis or anxiety. You know, the anxiety part I can relate to.
Anxiety, that's all just the intimidation MO that is, you know, of course, how Squatch rolls start with.
Yeah, you know.
Intimidation.
How would you, you said directional earlier. I mean, what do you mean by directional, like when it's the end of town?
Well, like if you ever get a freaky feeling in the woods, like something's wrong with the woods or something changed in the woods, I just got a bad vibe about these woods or something like that.
Yeah,
if it's ever like coming from or about a specific direction, then that almost makes you wonder. It's one thing to just get wigged out, but why would somebody, and it's happened to me many times and other people I've been with, get a bad feeling about a certain place coming from a place because something's over there. That's why. Something you ain't seen or heard consciously, but you felt it. It affects you. Infrasound affects you a lot of different ways. And it fits right in with that anxiety, disorientation. That's all that fits just fine with my man's intimidation program. Because that's what he's all about. And my buddy Cindy wanted me to talk about all the times that I've had sticks thrown at me.
Please touch upon that. I mean, if you had rocks
behind
you as
well. I'm going to tell you right now, I only worked the Piedmont a little bit, and there's plenty of rocks up there. And one time I think I heard some rock clacking. That's the only rock clacking I ever heard. But down where most I do my work, you're hard-pressed to find a rock anywhere. But there's plenty of sticks in that swamp. And they love to throw a stick. They just love to throw sticks. I have been towed at so many times, I don't know. I've been hit bunches of times. I've been knocked down twice to the ground.
With the sticks?
With tree limbs.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir. I probably got the Guinness Book of World Record for most stuff being thrown at them by a Sasquatch. Because that's the main thing they do. And like I tell the people, you know, that might be with me or whatever, that's good. As long as you're doing your daddy's okay. If he stops, then we got to worry. But, you know, right now the intimidation program is those stuff.
Oh, yeah, no, I've had rocks thrown at me, and my, you know, I've had plenty of witnesses there. You know, what I call the witching hour always seems to happen around the hours of 2 and 4 in the morning at my location. But
we had rocks
thrown at us, and I've had the wood knocks and all that. Never had any sticks thrown at me, mainly because I think there's enough rocks to be thrown that they feel no need to throw a stick. But,
I've had tree limbs and countless little balls off of gum trees and pine cones and little sticks and all kinds of stuff. I mean, that's what they prefer to do, is scare you off. You know?
Yeah, I was going to say, you think that's their intention is to try and scare you off?
That's the same reason they make noise and break trees and stomp their feet loud where you can hear them stomping and tell us a big old animal over there. It's all part of the intimidation program. They want you gone.
I was out last night. I was out with a witness out in Mount Hood National Forest, and we heard a scream, It was really odd. It sounded human-like, and it could have been possibly, but it was a really guttural scream. And then nothing happened for quite a few hours, and then around I looked at my watch. It was 2:27 in the morning for two significant snaps of, like, a large limb, just snap. And then 5 seconds pass, and then snap. And this happened really close to camp. I mean, I was surprised, you know, the point where I got up and started looking around trying to see something, and I didn't see anything. But the snaps I found really odd because it wasn't like a stepping sound where it stepped on a branch and snapped.
It was intentional break.
Yeah, it was an intentional break. You know, what did
they were
I don't
probing.
Know.
They were testing. They was feeling you out.
Yeah, and from there I heard some bipedal footsteps on, it sounded like gravel, you know, like someone's walking on the gravel, and there's lots of gravel up where I was at. But it was, you know, the footsteps. But the stick breaks or limb breaks were, it didn't sound like it was from a tree. It sounded, you know, in my opinion, of course, like it had a limb, whatever this was, had a limb in its hand and just snapped it in half.
Mm-hmm.
No wood knocks, no rocks thrown, nothing like that. But
the only time I've ever heard that was when I found what I called a super nest. I've seen structures and nests all, but this one time I seen a nest that was pretty impressive. And I knew one animal had been in the mid area. It spooked and went across the creek over to my left when I walked up to the nest.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't want to walk right up to it at first. I turned around and I went back to it because I said, it's too good of a chance. I had the camera there, whatever.
Yeah.
And right as I started going up to it, I see very large fecal deposit. There is a large pile of doorknob-sized diameter scat laying on the ground out in front of the nest about, you know, 20 feet from her. And I knew that one animal, like I say, over to my left. But right about the time I started filming that scat, I looked down the camera and said, well, damn, there you go, right there. So ain't no horses or cows or nothing allowed in this area. And this is mighty big to be hog, you know, if that don't look right. And right about that time, I heard a stick break, just like you talking about, just to my right, maybe, you know, 30 feet at the most from me, right there in the edge of the woods.
Yeah.
And it sounded just like an intentional, like you say, in the hand kind of break. It wasn't a footstep.
Right.
And it wasn't like he bumped into a tree or nothing like that, Eric.
Right.
He broke a stick to let me know he was over there. And when I, right then, I knew I was in a dangerous situation. I'm at the house. I got one close to me. I didn't even know it was here a second ago. I already know there's another one back over there. And right when that one broke a stick, see, I turned around with the camera and looked that way. And when I turned my back to the one on the left across the river, creek right there, he threw the stick. And I turned around with the camera, and this is the time I see the stick hit the ground. I said, okay, it's time to go. So I was right there. I tried to film up in the nest a little bit. It was all dark in there, and I shot the scat a little bit, and I just made up some new cuss words, and I ran. I ran, and I ran across that swamp.
Yeah.
And I run a long ways, and I walked a long ways, and them things followed me a long ways. I done been escorted more than one time out of them woods.
They wanted you out.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
They'll escort you right on out of there.
Yeah, I mean, last night I didn't get that impression. It was more, I don't know, you know, I can't say without, you know, 100% that it was.
They were feeling you out, or they wanted you to know they was over there or something, see what you
Yeah, I mean, it is an area that I've met a man, you know, a guy in that area that has actually seen a Sasquatch there. And the other witness I was out with, you know, it's actually a horse camp, and the horses were riled, and, you know, it's a very... it's a good area. I mean, it's the first time in this area, you know, that I've been. But the stick breaks, and we did hear a knock off in the distance, but it could have been elk or something.
Right.
What stood out to me was those two stick breaks, because I actually took my wife with me this time, and we were both laying in our bed and heard them. And I said to her, I said, did you hear that? You know, figuring she was awake, and she's like, yeah. And then right after that, snap again. And it was really close. Really, it was
prominent.
Not, I called a stick.
Yeah, a clean snap. Like.
Clean snap, but it was a thick stick, you know. And I've heard animals step on stuff and break. This was just a crack. And
right.
I went out the next day looking around in the direction I thought that I had heard this, and I didn't find anything. But you know, I thought that was really odd, especially with that scream we had heard earlier in the night. You know, 5-6 hours beforehand. Coming from a mountaintop, and the scream was, like I said, it could have been a human. I don't think so because of the area we were at, but and I'm not ruling that out. But the scream was very guttural.
Well, they will make some human-like noises.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you know, there's a big debate, human, non-human. I refer to them as apes, but in my mind, we're apes too. So.
Yeah, no, I agree.
We're just different.
Why do you think they've remained undetected for so long? You know, you'd think if it was just an ape, we would have discovered this by now. I mean, this thing,
well,
even though it's throwing
detected,
sticks and
just,
rocks
just
at you and things, it wants to avoid us.
It does. See, it's the master of its domain, the first thing. That's why the average fella just don't walk up on one every time you go out in the woods deer hunting or whatever. Now, however, now hunters do come up with some of the best encounters because they're the ones, you know, out there. See, to have, you know, a sight, and of course, you have to have a person, too. And as the population grows, it's going to be more and more encounters, inevitably. Because these Sasquatch, they ain't going nowhere around here. They got plenty of habitat and plenty of food. The hog and the deer population is growing. So there ain't no shortage of groceries around here. And ain't nobody hunting them out. He's an apex predator. You know, they ain't going nowhere no time soon. And the more we encroach, sooner or later, you know, the incident rate is going to increase. So, I mean, he is the king of stealth. Make no mistake. When you walk out there in the woods, he's the king.
Yeah.
You ain't got nothing on this thing. Because you're thinking something with a big old brain cavity, and he ain't spending all that brain building cell phones and airplanes. He's staying hid and getting something to eat. So, you know, he's real good at eating and staying hid.
Well, that's his prime objective. You know, like you said, he's not focusing on other areas. It's survival and knowing his domain.
But they,
and they're really smart, and they are so smart. People always underestimate how smart they are. It's kind of funny sometimes, but I mean, they always surprise me. I mean,
do you think they know then that we're the end all of their way of existence, or you know,
I don't
moose
think they really like
us hide
too
from
much.
Us, but we can find them and document them.
Yeah, I got a feeling that, I mean, I just get this feeling now. I don't have no evidence, of course, but I just kind of get the vibe like they probably not. Well, at least I put it this way. The animals I've seen in the daylight close range wasn't no cuddly, feely, teddy bear kind of thing going on. This thing is an ambush predator of the highest magnitude. And you are in the food chain, you're just not at the top of it.
Right.
So that's the first thing you got to recognize. You groceries to this thing if it wants it to go down like that. You're talking about something that'll snatch a 200-pound hog up and kill it in just a few seconds, barehanded or either by beating it against a tree. So, I mean, it goes down just like that.
I think they know they can take us in a fist fight, but I think they know that we are...
We got the firepower.
You know, yeah, exactly.
Right.
We got the bulldozers, we got the guns, the planes.
Theory. I go with the 20-stick. I split the middle. I say, okay, I ain't got no smoke pole. I ain't got no boomstick, buddy, but check this out. I got some reach. And even other animals, like a big cat or something like that, a hog even, can see you got a reach advantage when you got that big spear. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's the instinct to back off of that spear. So there's no doubt
mind
that
I'm just not a believer, I guess, of them attacking humans because, you know, there hasn't really been any proven.
Right. I mean, if they wanted us dead, we'd have to go in the woods with torches and pitchforks a long time ago. And war to stay out.
Yeah.
You know, and that ain't the case. They just want you to go away. They just don't want to mess with you for the most part. Now, of course, you know, people got all these, you know, habituation thing. You know, I don't know about all that. But the animals I've seen are big and nasty, powerful predators, and I did not get to come cuddle with me, Bob, at all.
Yeah.
So always be extra careful. You're dealing with vicious predators in some cases.
Yeah. Yeah, you never know. And so do you still get the same sort of excitement and thrill that you got the first time? I mean, how many encounters have you had? I mean, it sounds like you've had a lot of experiences.
Well, now, close-range encounters now, yeah. I mean, I think I've seen one a bunch of times. You know, was that a bear? What was that? I've seen some. What was it? But now, as far as knowing I've seen what I've seen, two times in the daylight at pretty close range, I've seen one walking one time and I've seen one running. That was in 78 and in 2012. Right. And also in 2012, it was a nighttime thing in the creek where that thing was pretty close. Now, it was dark, but I know exactly what was standing there. You know, I mean, I know what I was looking at. But, I mean, that's about it. There's been other times when I think I've seen one, maybe, but it's just inconclusive. And oddly enough, you know, most times when I photograph one or get a video of one, I didn't even see it at a time. I'm fiddling with the camera, looking through the camera, doing something stupid, zooming on some hogs or something, and he's right there. I ain't noticing. But I go back and watch the video 2-3 times, well, look at there. What's that?
Well,
and it always goes back to like the one that was herding them hogs. I mean, I knew something was strange the way that whole thing went down. Why the mama hog would be acting so funny, and like the way the pigs came across the creek straight at me when they shouldn't have, which is kind of opposite of the thing they should have done. You know, it was weird, man.
That's another thing. You really got to take notice of the wildlife in your area and what they're doing and how they're reacting to.
Well, I tell you, that's true, man. I mean, I didn't grow up around no computer too much. I don't know nothing about no phone or no computer. I got one of them dumb phones, but I did grow up in the woods a little bit, and I know kind of about how the swamp works and what's going on in there. And, you know, so I do have that working for me. It's hard for me to share and do things I'd like to do on the Internet. You know, nowadays, that's what I always say about the sharing thing. We live in the Internet age. We got a tool now that we can share more than we could ever share before in our history. We need to really share our Bigfoot stuff.
Yeah. No, I agree. There's sometimes, you know, I think sometimes sharing can go a little bit too far. But I do think that if there's certain people out there in the field that I trust wholeheartedly, I think they're on the right track, and that they're doing the right thing, that I will share everything I have with, you know. And likewise, you know, and I hope, Mike, now that we've had this contact, that I can share some of my findings with you and you can share some of my findings.
Heck yeah, man.
And, sure. You know, and build upon that, you know. What are your thoughts of, you know, William Barnes, you know, the Falcon Project?
Well, I think a lot of the Falcon Project. I like that approach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on the poor man's version of that.
Yeah, aren't we all?
We got three things in the making here, and they slow coming because, I mean, you know how that goes. Shoestring budget. But the quad rotor, along with a blimp,
mm-hmm.
and this is a tether blimp now.
Okay.
In conjunction with a model rocket, a simple child's model rocket that launches and has a camera in it, and has a glide path, a programmable glide path.
Yeah.
So we locate the animal by using the high altitude rocket with like a search pattern glide path, and then you would take the quad rotor when you got a little closer in and try to figure out where he's going. And in South Carolina, we got a bunch of little swamp heads and creeks and stuff. And one geological feature we have here is called the Carolina Bay.
Okay.
And these bays are like sinkholes. Sometimes we got peat moss, bog, or quicksand, something in the middle of them. It's real, real thick around the ring of it. It's usually, you know, a switch cane and then bamboo briars and a ring of trees right there before you get to the middle of the thing. And it's real hard to penetrate. But I figured if you had a tether blimp and you could chase him in there with your quad rotor and get him to go in a thick swamp head like a bay or something like that that's open in the middle, you can launch that tether blimp over from the upwind side, just have it right there at low altitude kind of looking over into the hole in the middle of the bay.
Yeah.
Open area.
See, you're backwoods, so, but you're not that far backwoods. You put some thought into this and looking. I mean, obviously, you feel technology is the way to go.
Well, you got to use your technology. It's like anything else. You got to use your best tools available, man. And technology can help us.
Yeah.
Now, I barely got the money to roll out any of this stuff, but I'm working on all of it. You know.
Yeah.
Some of it's in conceptual phase. I got a little toy quad rotor. I'm practice flying just so I can get my skill level up so I don't wreck the good one.
Yeah.
But they fly the same way. It's the same remote, as a matter of fact. Until, you know, you can get the first-person viewer goggles from Zeiss where you can just sit there and fly like you're in the thing. that's kind of what you have to do, is just fly with a regular, you know, remote controller. But, you know, we do the best we can. We ain't ashamed to go after some technology. We're trying to utilize. That's what we all need to do. We need to take advantage while we can. We got a lot of tools available.
Yep.
And like I say, them bays, you know, it's like stepping back into Jurassic Park or something when you go in the middle of one of them things sometimes. Venus flytraps and pitch plants and quicksand and gators and snakes and rare flowers and plants and whatnot. But, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that out of them thousands of bays in South Carolina alone, that there's plenty of squatches living in them things.
Yep.
Plenty of. It's the perfect habitat. Fresh water in the middle a lot of times, and then a ring of impenetrable bamboo briars and switch cane trees on the outside.
Yep. No, I fully agree.
So I've seen them more or less take refuge in there, and I, you know, I just thought, you know, a tethered blimp with a cheap camera on it might serve some purpose there.
Now, are they? Do you think they're year-round in the Carolinas, or do you believe
well,
in,
I'll tell
like,
you my thoughts on the whole migration thing.
Yeah, please do.
Where you got a bunch of elevation change, you have game herds that migrate. Therefore, your squatches are going to migrate with these game herds for the most part. Now, where you don't have elevation change, like where I'm at, more or less in the coastal plain of South Carolina, you got zero migration. If the river rises and the river floods too long, they might have to move. If they want to go kill a deer or a hog, they got to go out there to the perimeter of the flood water where the animals are at to feed on them. But he can climb a tree for a little while. And that nest I seen was really, you know, that super nest, it was built in such a way he could get 10 or 12 feet off the ground and live pretty good and that thing. So I'd say that when the prey moves, they move. Mm-hmm. When it don't move, they don't move. And I've even seen that reflected sometimes in the structures they make. It's like the non-migrational animal tends to make a more prominent, well-finished structure than you might tend to see in the seasonal structures that's more prevalent in the American West where there's a lot of altitude differences.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, they have to be somewhat nomadic, I mean, just to exist. They don't have a grocery store to go to and... Yeah,
right.
They have to follow the animals.
Range,
the berries
right.
are in season here or there, or let's say the humans are developing this area. Well, we got to move here.
Right, and there's some of that going on. I think when they saw that gorilla type animal that was reported in New Bern, Alabama, a few years back, that's exactly what was going on. If you look at the Google Earth thing, you can see they were building some new neighborhoods where it had been habitat in the swamp, and that was crossing the road heading west toward the Big River. Just bailed on the little swamp and headed to the big one. That's when they seen. And there's a whole family, actually, three of them spotted by one of the witnesses.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the migration thing, but I like what you're saying, and I kind of go with that flow that, you know, where the food's at is where they're going to be at, you know, whether it's they have a 50, you know, mile radius that they, you know, between elevation,
just,
valley to mountain, right. You know.
If their goal is to remain hidden, which it seems like it is, I think any major migration would make them a target. They'd have to go through new areas. They wouldn't know where water sources might be, and I think they'd been discovered by now. Well, it looks like we're down to our last minute here. So really appreciate you coming on, Apex.
Oh, man, that was great, man. It was my pleasure.
Oh, absolutely,
you got a lot of great stuff going on. It seems like you've had a lot of experience as well, and we're going to have you on down the road again.
Yeah, man, I'd love to be back on, man. Like I say, I've been at it for a little while now, and I don't, you know, after I've seen some stuff myself, I just figured that it was just meant to be that I would just follow that path, man, you know.
Nice.
So I just kind of ended up
found
in the crypto.
You.
Yeah, it kind of did find me.
Yep.
But I'd love to come on whenever you have me, man.
Awesome.
Excellent. I really think you know, you got some great stuff going on for you, Mike, and we really want to hear more about this disclosure group, and I hope you share any findings you come across, and that this group that you're a part of now will share with us, and it really takes off, and you know, we can all work together.
Yeah, I'll definitely let you know if there's any kind of news forthcoming. It's basically something you're not going to hear a lot about for a while. Like I say, until we actually, you know, have something good.
All right.
Cool. Thank you for joining us, everyone, in the chat room as well. We'll see you next week with another episode of Monster X Radio.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, guys.